Markets react to progress in the fight over the debt ceiling.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Stock prices posted a surge yesterday amid news that power players in Washington might be able to avoid a default by the United States next week. The Dow went up 323 points, 2.2% on Thursday. The Friday global market numbers in a moment. But right now, let's get an update on where things stand in this debt ceiling fight and government shutdown. Marketplace's Mark Garrison joins us live.
David, both the Obama administration and House Republicans are sending signals that a deal could be close, at least on temporarily raising the debt ceiling. The president and Republicans met yesterday. Both sides were talking well into the night. And the Republicans have offered to raise the debt ceiling enough to take care of government borrowing for a few weeks, through late November, essentially. In exchange, they want broad talks about budget cuts, and in that process could talk about how to reopen the government.
Now, am I hearing this right? Stopping or curbing Obamacare is off the table?
Well, there are certainly some Republicans who still want that, but the party leadership essentially recognizing that's not a fight they can win here, so they're focused more on scoring some points on other conservative priorities, so trimming the entitlement budget, things like that. And overall, Wall Street is optimistic about a debt ceiling deal. Republicans and Democrats both using words we haven't heard in a while, like progress, forward, and movement, but it's not a done deal yet, either on the shutdown or the debt ceiling race.
Marketplace's Mark Garrison, thank you. Now, let's do the numbers. S&P, NASDAQ, and Dow futures are all up about 0.1% this morning, a hint about things to come. The FT 100 in London is up 0.7% now. The key stock index in Hong Kong closed up 1.2%. The Postal Service in England and the other British Isles, as of this morning, is a stock that can be traded. Royal Mail is up 3.4% at the moment, the first day of trading after its initial public offering, going up faster than the price of a stamp, some of the British papers are observing. Setting prices not on Wall Street, but in football now. When the Broncos host the Jaguars Sunday afternoon, Denver will be a heavy favorite, an almost 4-touchdown favorite. The Las Vegas line on the game, that's the expected difference in points by the end of the game, is one of the biggest ever. Dan Weissman reports on the significance.
Like everybody else, bookmakers in Vegas know the Broncos are great. The Jaguars are awful. They don't know what the final score will be, but they don't have to predict the future to make money. In fact, Chris Avery says the spread doesn't reflect exactly how bookmakers expect the game to turn out. He's an economist at Harvard, published a widely cited study about the NFL betting line.
The people who are setting the point spread are not trying to get the point spread right. They're trying to make money. So what they want to do is they want to balance the betting on both sides.
Meaning, they want to set the line so half the people will take Denver, half Jacksonville. That way, they pay off the winners with money they get from the losers and collect their commission.
You know, that never really happens.
That's Jay Root. He sets the line for MGM's Vegas hotels, and he guesses Las Vegas will see 3 to 4 million in bets on this game alone.
We always have an imbalance in the wagering, so we're always having to root for a certain side, and we'll be rooting for Jacksonville, I guarantee you, this weekend.
That's because even a huge point spread won't be enough to chase away a whole lot of bets on the Broncos. I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
After a long management lockout, then a contract offer of lower pay was rejected by musicians. The conductor of the Minnesota Orchestra quit the other day. The New York City Opera will close its doors this month. Marketplace's economics guy Chris Farrell has been closely following what you might call the classical music economy. Hello, Chris.
How you doing, David?
I'm all right, but classical music seems to have a problem here.
Oh, I mean, so the Minnesota Orchestra, there's been a management lockout for a year, and we have the New York City Operas, the lights are going out there, and there's been all these strikes.
But you don't see this as a problem of demand for classical music.
The Brandenburg Concertos, I love them. I went to iTunes, about 180 albums that you can download. If you do an Amazon.com search, 1,510 possibilities. And all over the country, you can get your Chopin, your Beethoven, your Sibelius on public radio. In fact, I would argue classical music has never been more available, even as the symphony orchestra and the operas are actually in trouble.
They're in trouble. Why? Because of things maybe that other parts of the, dare I say, entertainment industry and culture are also facing?
I think you just hit on it. You know, if you look at what's happening to classical music, journalism, popular music, they're all being caught up in this maelstrom of the digital economy. So the organizations can't figure out how to make money. But at the same time, for the consumer, they've never had so much ability to tap into these incredible medias.
So is there a way to bring those two ideas together, a solution?
Well, I think there is a solution. I mean, we're seeing the rise of a more entrepreneurial nation. So if you look at classical musicians, you know, many of them work for the symphony orchestra or they work for the opera, but then they have various businesses on the side. And we used to call that moonlighting, but now it's sort of part of what they do. And you're seeing the same thing with writers and documentary producers and painters. We value creativity and it's flourishing, but we haven't quite figured out how do we pay for it? How do people make a living? And I think part of the whole discussion we're having right now with this Affordable Care Act is about how do you have a healthcare system and a retirement system that's portable, that allows for people to be more creative and more entrepreneurial, as opposed to having to be with an employer like a symphony orchestra. This is a major shift in our economy that is unfolding over time.
Chris Farrell, the economics maven of Marketplace. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
And if you had any doubt, the spirit of capitalism is alive and well in New York. The artist Banksy famously does his street art on walls here and there. Recently, some entrepreneurs in the Brownsville section of Brooklyn have been monetizing this by charging to see the Banksy graffito in an alley. The video posted at New York Magazine shows guys with an open pizza box blocking the view, but they'll move it out of the way for a fee between $5 and $20, according to various reports. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.